Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click.
Click, 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 click.
Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
I am so excited that for 2024, Your Brand Amplified is proudly sponsored by one of my favorite platforms, Simplified. This AI-driven platform is a game changer for design and video content. With Simplified, I can effortlessly transform lengthy videos, such as my podcast, into engaging, shareable clips and streamline workflows with an intuitive subtitle generator. For designers out there, you can explore the AI-powered image generator, create compelling presentations, and design eye-catching YouTube thumbnails with ease. Revolutionize your creative process at simplify.com with a free trial. Now let's dive into today's guest.
Welcome to Your Brand Amplified, the podcast where we interview marketers, publicists, and brands to learn their stories, what makes them tick, and tips and tricks that make a difference.
This is Annika Jackson, and I'm here with Kim Rozdeva. Kim, I have to say, I love that your profile says branding guru, author, speaker, blogger, and husband and dad. I think it's so important for us to really fully authentically live as part of our brands, as our whole beings, right? And not forget that personal part. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to talking to somebody else that knows about branding.
Well, as I said right before we got on, you have an amazing wealth of experience. You've worked with some major, major brands. You've been a Fortune 500 corporate leader. And I'm really excited to learn from you to talk about branding from your perspective, the changes you've seen, and your first book, maybe tease out your second book if you'd like to. But before we get there, let's start with you. How did the brand of Kim Rozdeva start?
Wow. How much time do we have?
45 minutes an hour.
quickly, I grew up on Vancouver Island, furthest western point of Canada. I grew up there. I decided I wanted to get an education. I started the UVic, which is in Victoria, Vancouver Island. People at the time thought I was going to some university in Australia. So I quickly moved on to University of Toronto. More people knew where that was. So I graduated from there and I decided that was a good place to start a career. So I came back to Vancouver Island. My fiance, I convinced her to marry me and we moved to Toronto. And I started working for a company in marketing. And I really enjoyed the communication aspect of marketing and, you know, the advertising. And so I went from there to an advertising agency and I was in the advertising biz for about 15 years. I started with Ogilvy, one of the largest ones in the world. Great place to learn as well. And I went from there to a small one, and then I went back to client side. And I've been in client side now for quite a few years. I look back now, and I wish I knew what I knew today when I was in an agency. Because, you know, it's really hard to, there's no real, well, career. There was actually no education system when I was growing up to prepare you for an agency environment. But if you can survive an agency environment, you can survive any.
Well, I'd love for you to talk about that a little bit, because I do have a lot of master's students go, you know, fight on Trojans. I teach at USC on the digital media side and the PR and advertising side. So what is the difference between working at an agency versus working in-house?
So at an agency, you are, it's a microcosm of multiple industries. So you've got creative people. You know, the right brains, the left brains, you've got the media, you've got the analytics, you've got the insight researchers trying to sift through and find some insights. As I said, you've got the writers, copywriters, you've got art directors, you've got account service people. I was on the account side. And you bring all these different disciplines together every day. I would always walk away and go, wow, because I'd learned so many things from other people, from other different backgrounds. And number of times I would have, you know, these information interviews from, again, university students coming in and saying, you know, how do you get in? Like, what kind of, you know, career or what kind of education should I get? And I would reflect on all the people that were in the agency at that time, and their backgrounds were diverse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just because you have an English degree doesn't mean that's where you're going to go from a copywriter, right? I've seen account people become copywriters. So, you know, it's all about understanding people. That, mm-hmm. to me, was the common piece to it. But it's also about learning businesses. So the really unique thing that I really enjoyed is I could be working with like five different industries. And the relationship between that product or that brand
mm-hmm.
with that customer would be totally different for each one.
That's a lot you have to be on top of.
Well, it's exciting.
Yeah.
Because you have to sit back and watch and listen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm one of these people that, you know, I hate really busy places, but you'll see me in the mall sitting there or in a park sitting there. And I can spend hours just watching people and I'm watching what they're doing. And, you know, I can watch, you know, people talking to each other. You kind of think, now, is this a fun conversation they're having or is this a... And you can watch, you can see, you know, their hand expressions, their facial expressions. And again, this idea of understanding people is the core of communications.
Yeah, absolutely. So you got to be in the hustle and bustle. You weren't working in silos. Everybody had to work together as teams for the good of the client.
Yeah.
And then moving to in-house positions, it's much more directed.
So you're far more strategic. You are thinking of the big picture. You're thinking of how does this interact internally,
mm-hmm.
not only from your customer perspective, but how is it going to resonate internally as well? So when you're building anything and you're going to brief the agency, you need to understand your customer as well as the agency, if not better.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of agencies pride themselves that they actually know the customer better than their client. But if you're a really good client, you know the customer even better.
Thanks.
And what did your work look like in one and the other? Because you said you were on the, I want to say, customer side. You're working with the clients, helping make sure everybody was putting things together. But then on the other side, what did your role look like?
So I direct a team of people. So the thing that actually stayed in both jobs is using the word why.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't use it once to get to the answer. You've got to use it at least three times. And understanding the underlying principle of what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it doesn't matter where you are, if you're receiving or taking, you need to understand where is it coming from. And it's not so obvious. And, you know, you'll sit down and you'll start saying, it's usually a problem, right? That you're trying to solve. And that's what a brand does every day is try to solve a problem. But it's not so obvious. You have to actually ask the question over and over until it actually gets the really underlying reason. I mean, human beings, we love to be very rational when we are asked a question.
Right.
You know, we don't go all emotional. We don't go all, because that's not our nature. But when we make decisions, we are highly emotional.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And so the two don't necessarily connect. What I like about research, when you're doing focus groups, you know, you're watching and going, okay, this is what they're saying, but their body is telling you something different.
Right. Wow. It makes me think of children, since we are both parents, you know, early ages, they start asking why. It's one of the words that they know, and they keep asking and they keep digging. And as parents, we don't necessarily want to sit there and explain. We can get frustrated, but I love that you use the why, because it is so important in understanding what are we really solving for our clients?
Yeah.
And why is this important? And how's it going to motivate them?
And a lot of people just want to take the order, right? They just, okay, what do you want me to do? And my team does that a lot because we have internal clients, right? We have lots of internal clients, both from a marketing perspective, from a corporate issues management. And it's so easy just to take the order, but then I'll come to me and go, but why? But why are we doing this? I don't know. They just want to go, well, no, we got to go back and ask why. Mm-hmm. There might be a better solution.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's something a lot of people don't do.
No, it's harder.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you have to ask a couple of times, and it's hard for people. It's hard for people to answer those questions. I mean, it's just not on top of your head.
Mm-hmm. How do you gain inspiration to keep on living in this world of branding? And particularly, I mean, you've been in your role at a high functioning, you know, capacity for quite a while.
I really like coming up with new ideas and new solutions. So I never try to be in a box. I'm not one of these people that has a formula in my head all the time. I love those people where you can, you know, they'll come back and they have the formula and they spit it out. And I go, wow, that's incredible. I start from ground zero every time.
Ooh.
And for sometimes it's really annoying because I could probably be halfway through it, but I would start right at the bottom again and work it through till I came to something that I think is a solution. So for me, everything, it's new, exciting opportunity to come up with a new solution. I don't go cookie cutter. And, you know, there's times where I've had to stop myself as time goes on to say, oh, I tried that. Doesn't work. You know, you hear that quite a bit. Oh, I tried it. That doesn't work. I stopped that a long time ago because things have changed so dramatically and they continue to change so dramatically that just because it didn't work then doesn't mean it's not going to work now.
Right. I want to go back to that and talk about how the landscape has changed. But before we get into that, do you primarily work on products that have been around for a while and maybe just new iterations of them? Are you helping create concepts for new brands that serve or, you know, taking an old brand and a totally different use case for it in the market?
Yeah. So where I'm at right now in my career, I do mostly corporate. So it's established brands. Historically, from my marketing background, did a lot of new and old, you know, trying to revive a brand is always fun. Trying to update it, maybe change the perception, which is really hard. But those are nice challenges to have because they are really hard. Starting with a brand new product is easy. Easy relative, depending, making sure that you've got a USP, a unique selling proposition that does make it unique. If it's a Me Too, then you've got a lot of work to do. I always love the idea of being first in a person's mind. We have so many things going on in our head. We've got so many brands and products in our head.
Right.
So if we can try and find a positioning that is new, that is something new, it's much easier for us to, for the consumer to actually capture that. I mean, you know, we always hear it's great stories of, can you ask somebody, you know, who was the first of something? And you will remember the first, right? The first person that climbed Mount Everest, the first person that flew across the Atlantic, the first person that won whatever the fastest. But you can't, nobody will tell you who's the second.
True.
Ever. Now, if you can reposition it and go, oh, okay, so the first person that went across the Atlantic, well, who was the first woman? She wasn't the first. But Earhart.
Right.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
So you just have to look for another different way of positioning that secondary product with something unique. It has to have something new. If it doesn't have something unique, you can't just make it up. That's too easy, right?
Yeah. Well, and we're bombarded with so many messages, as you said, all the time. And it can be really hard to find the time and the space to do the research, to quiet our minds, to let that creativity flow and come up with the new ideas. And I think you've shared a few ways that you do it. You like to sit back and observe. You like to ask why until you get to the real root and the core and the emotion. And you also like to do research and find the data analysis and surveying and you know, focus groups and things like that. What are some other ways that people can think about that aspect of branding and how they're putting together, whether it's a revamp of an older product or something new?
So this one is the easiest. And is the one that I don't understand why so few brands do it. They do lots of research, but it's actually just go ask your customers. Just go talk to them. Actually be in a room with them. Ideally be in the situation where they're actually using it. So if it's in their kitchen, be in their kitchen. If it's in their living room, if it's in their car, if it's in their office, be in their environment and just have a conversation. I know we're going to talk about my book, Branding Queens, but one of the things I saw in many of these women that built iconic brands is they spent time with their customers. A lot of cases, they were their customers, but they would be out there all the time with their customers. And sometimes they didn't even know who they were. They thought they were salespeople in a lot of cases, had no idea who they were. But what were they doing? They were listening. They were finding out more things about how they use their product. I mean, when you're a designer, you're building something, you build it a way you would use it, but maybe others would use it differently. And those insights are huge, and you can't get that in a research study.
Right. And that also means so that you have to be more intentional and take the time to set that strong foundation and be really invested in that before you just throw something out on the market and hope it sticks. So let's get into the book. You recently wrote the book about 20 entrepreneurial women who built iconic brands. Why women? Who are the women? And do you think that women are better at brand building?
These are all really good questions. So do you know Veuve Clicquot, the champagne?
Oh, yes.
Tu parlez-vous français?
Oh, un petit peu.
Okay. Veuve, in English, means widow. I did not know that.
I did not know that either.
And I found this out, and I go, Widow Clicquot, why would you put widow on a brand of champagne?
Right.
So then I found out that the champagne, the producer of it, was a woman back in 1810. I have a blog, so I thought, this is a really interesting story. So I did my research, find out more about Barbe Nicole Clicquot, and she actually branded her first product in 1810. And I mean, today, I mean, it's one of the biggest champagne houses in the world. And I was there to try and figure out, was there a legal requirement at the time? Napoleon Bonaparte was in charge. Women were second-class citizens. They had very few rights in that time. So why? So you're going to have to read the book to find out why.
You have me hanging.
But she was the start of this quest for me to go, are there women out there that built iconic brands? Well, I was quite dumbfounded because I, for years, had been drinking this product and again, just oblivious that there was a woman behind it. So then that was my next thing, other women out there. And there are. There's quite a few other women out there. Bissell, vacuum cleaners. Anna Bissell. Right now, her great-great-grandson is running the business.
Oh, my gosh.
And she built this right into an international organization before she passed away. Madam C.J. Walker, I think quite a few people know Madam C.J. Walker. She was the first Black woman to become a millionaire in the United States. There was Elizabeth Arden. Canadian, actually. She was born in Canada and then moved to New York City and started her empire. Coco Chanel, Pepperidge Farms, which is a really interesting one because that's Margaret Rudkin. And she was even a baker. She started off making bread. And she started making bread because her son, her second son, I think it was second or third son, quite wealthy family. Her husband was in the brokerage business in New York City. They actually moved out to the country. So Pepperidge Farm, they had Pepperidge trees in their... Sort of a, it was a small little hobby farm, but very quaint.
Gentleman farmers.
Exactly. That's the word I'm looking for. And she started making bread because her doctor said that maybe there's additives in the bread. At that time, going back into the 50s, there was lots of additives coming in. There was, you know, it was like Tang, for example, was invented back then. And she started making this whole wheat bread. ground wheat, all no additives, and she started making this bread. Her first attempt was dismal, but she learned how to make bread, and she was selling it. She was making it for her son, and it saw improvements in his allergies.
Wow.
And started selling it to the doctor and other doctors, to their clients, because it was a healthy bread. And she ended up actually selling it to a couple of stores in New York City. And, you know, the rest is history as we move on.
Amazing.
But it goes on from there. Another really interesting thing is Olive and Beach. Beach aircraft. Small little aircrafts. Really popular. In the Second World War, they built hundreds of these things during the Second World War. Her husband, in a lot of cases, particularly when you go back in time, this was a husband and wife startup business.
Wow.
And unfortunately, in a lot of these cases, their husbands passed away early.
Mm.
But I'll go back quickly to Barbara Nicole Picot. She didn't have to work. You know, she was middle class, upper class in France. She wanted to. So in all these cases, it wasn't the question that they had to, they wanted to. And they took these businesses beyond anything that they had previous their husband running it. So anyway, I could go on and on. I mean, the youngest one is Sarah Blakely of Spanx. Mm-hmm. Not too far behind her is Tori Burch.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably the most interesting one in the sense of doesn't make sense, but when you start thinking about does, is Queen Elizabeth II. When you think of building a brand,
mm-hmm.
she was the brand.
Yeah.
And I mean, an incredible brand that she built.
Right.
But it was also a very isolated brand in the sense of how controlling she was and making sure people saw exactly what she wanted them to see.
Mm-hmm. That has to be a tough life.
I think so.
Yeah.
But I mean, she was very purposeful in everything she did.
Right.
As a brand.
Yeah. Which is very important.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today for generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
To be purposeful and to think about the purpose behind your brand.
And that's why I'm always hesitant to talk about personal branding. Because to me, personal branding isn't really a brand, because we're, as humans, we're emotional. And there's a great phrase that I've heard that brands want to become more like humans and humans are trying to become more like brands.
Oh.
Brands want to become more like human because it's richer, more emotion. Becoming more like a brand as a human removes a lot of that.
Right.
We become like a box of cereal. I don't want to be a box of cereal. I don't want to be put into a label of just this is me and this is all you get. Because we've got so many different layers as human beings. But I do understand the need to brand your business and if your service. But as human beings, all of us, to me, it seems more like a social media requirement than it does a human requirement.
It's so interesting that you say that. In my PR and branding class, I approach it from the way that I work with a lot of clients on the PR side who come and say, I'm ready for PR. And I'm like, wait, you don't have a brand yet. You have a website. You have a logo. That's not a brand. Let's go back and do some work, figure out customer personas, your messaging, all of that. So one of the exercises we did was my students for their midterm created their personal brands, but it was really more about being really comfortable with who they are, what their values were, and how they would look for future employment. For most of them, their customer personas were people they wanted to work for. And so they would think about, well, why would I be a good person to work for them and their company? And so they had to think of their own competitive advantages, their unique selling propositions, if you will. And then they turned it to, for the final, they worked in groups and worked on brands that existed and came up with lots of recommendations and integrated marketing and blah, blah, blah. But to me, I think that is personal brand, but it's personal brand really isn't trying to become something you're not. It's really discovering who you are and using that, using the innate skill set that you have to showcase your best abilities to work in whatever industry you want to work in, or make sure that your work is aligned with who you are outside of the world.
Yeah. But you've got to make choices as well as to what do you want to actually present.
True.
And because for successful brands, it has to be one that I get really quick and it has to stay consistent all the time.
True. And that can be difficult.
And this is where humans fail to be able to be consistent. And we change as humans. As I said, I look back where I was and where I am today and the things I know today, and I do things differently. I'm an author in my 60s. I wish I had been an author when I was in my 40s, because I have so many books in my head that I don't know if I'm going to get them all out. But, you know, I would not have branded myself as an author. Well, I can't, but when back then, but I can today.
Right.
And that's different than was. Anyways, what I'm saying is a brand to be successful is consistent throughout, right? I know 150-year-old brand. Veuve Clicquot is almost a 200-year-old brand. It hasn't changed significantly. The quality is still there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they've probably taken the sugar content down, the sweetness over time. But humans, I just want to make sure people don't feel that they have to be so constructive.
Mm-hmm. And so stuck on that concept of being a brand.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're right. Being yourself is really important. But myself, I'm not sure how I... You know, some people, because I've had this discussion before. I'm the one that's always saying, well, I don't know about a personal brand. I think a resume is just as good. But you're right. People want to deal with people.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing your full self. Your full self doesn't mean it's like a brand. Because a brand, you have to pick the key components that you think your customer is going to want.
Right.
And going to be able to associate with. So there is a bit of controlling if you want to be successful. And the interesting thing that I hear from what you're saying about your students is they immediately went to their customer, which was the business, to go work backwards from there, which makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to only mention those things that are really important to that industry, that business.
True. Very true. So they're not going to necessarily share all the things that make them who they are. But yeah. So what was it like to write your first book?
Well, it took me 3 years. It was the silver lining to COVID. I had more time. I travel a lot I go back and forth to Toronto quite a bit. So I had 2 years of at home, working from home. So I had more time, which allowed me to finish this book. I'm fascinated by these women. I think you've kind of maybe you've noticed already. I rattled through, you know, I could talk to each one, a whole show on each one. Because they are, from a branding perspective, I mean, these women started with zero knowledge of what they were doing. But they were intuitive.
Yeah.
They listened. They had to learn. They learned so many new things. Well, think of building a business, right? You've got to learn about HR. You got to learn about supply chain. You got to work about, you know, marketing, the distribution, logistics. It goes on, right? And sure, they hired the best people as well around them. That's another reason that did. But as I said, I'm absolutely fascinated with these women and their brands, how they did it. So I'm now actually getting to your last question, because I haven't forgotten. Is empathy. All of these women had empathy for their target audience. In a lot of cases, as I said, their target audience, their customers were actually themselves.
Yeah.
Sarah Blakely was Spanx. She had a problem. She solved her problem and she knew that she had something to solve for other women. Quite a few of these women, that's how they started.
Yeah.
But the empathy, and again, I'll drop a couple of others, which was Anita Roddick. Anita Roddick was the Body Shop. And part of hers, and I'll pull in Madam C.J. Walker as well. These were caring brands.
Well,
caring brands in the sense of it was bigger than just selling a product. They were trying to do something to help other people or the world or for a better place. So, you know, we hear today so much about caring brands. These women were doing this. They didn't even have the terminology. They did. Mary Kay. I mean, she came into this very frustrated. She was actually going to start writing a book. She quit the company. She worked. She was training people all the time, particularly males. And she watched all of them get promoted beyond her. She left absolutely, totally upset to go, you know, I'm going to prove how to help other women survive in a man's world. And she actually started going, well, maybe I should start my own business. And she built the model in the style of helping other women build their businesses. So that's the model that she built, was that it's a separate bill. It's not like you're just like Avon was very different. Avon was, you were selling on behalf of Avon. You were a representative. Hers, you buy the product from her. Again, it's kind of like a franchise, but she wanted other women to own their own business. And so that's how she started. And when she started it, again, lots of people said, it's never going to work. No, it's not going to work. I mean, so many of these women heard that every time. No, that's not going to work. It's never been done before. And they listened to themselves. And, well, we know it works.
Right. Yeah.
So it was that empathy. And there's another quote that, again, I don't know where these quotes come from. But I will build it and they will come.
Hmm.
That sounds like a man.
That sounds like the nightmare for anybody who's thinking about building a brand from a communications perspective.
Yes, exactly. But when you see so many products that were built, that's how they built them. Right? They didn't build it from the customer backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's one of the unique, and it's not to say men don't think that way either. I just think there's more women that think that way than men.
Yeah. So would you like to tease out your book that you're working on right now? Is it Branding Queens Part 2? Is it along the same lines or something completely different?
Well, it's more of the practical. So during writing the book, Branding Queens, I came up with a framework and I call it the 5 C's of branding. And the 5 C's quite quickly is commitment, construct, community, content, and consistency.
And
my original plan was I was going to assess each woman, how they built the brands and under these 5 C's. And I started and, I was just like going along going, well, I think maybe this. And at the end of the day, they all did all 5 extremely well. So you need all 5 C's to build an iconic brand. No question. Any brand, you need 5 C's. And that 5 C's, I thought, wow, I could actually build a book off of the 5 C's to help other people build brands.
Nice.
So this is the book and it's called Loyalnomics. So Loyalnomics in the sense of right brain, left brain, because branding is all about science and art.
Right.
So I'm 3/4 through.
Fantastic.
And writing this. So it's more academic. It's definitely more academic, but there's a whole bunch of really great stories in there of brands to bring all of the C's to life.
Oh, I love that. So we can get our inspiration from meeting Branding Queens, inspiration and aspiration, and then we can learn all the practical application and how to in the second book.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and is it going to have workbooks? Are you going to be speaking, doing workshops?
Well, I have a full-time job.
Right, I know. I was just going to ask about that.
So I still have a full-time job. I'm still traveling. I have put in there some questionnaires to help. And I'm going whether it's going to be in there or will it be, I think it's probably going to be more web-based. It's easier just to go from a book to web-based so then people can input directly. They can, you know, manipulate it and work with it as opposed to having it in a book. So I'm kind of looking at some of those ideas to help, you know, navigate. I think, you know, asking questions sort of gets to the point a little easier so that it can be self-directed. I'm not interested in teaching. I just don't have the time.
No. Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll be able to write more books and maybe eventually you'll be able to at least come guest speak at a few classes. Hint, hint.
Absolutely. I'd love to do that. To me, all of this is about giving back now. I'm at the part of my career is, okay, I'm ready now to share what I've learned and what I'm seeing out there. I mean, what's really interesting is, sure, things are changing fast and rapidly, but the human brain has not changed one iota. So, you know, what I started and how I work with a human being and how to either persuade or interact or get them to like me hasn't changed. What has changed is all the channels that I can do that. But how you actually do it hasn't changed. I mean,
yeah.
The sad part is, you know, in an agency, and I watch this in an agency environment with technology as well, everything got speeded up. I can tell you, I remember typesetting, and this is probably something you go, what the heck's that? When they actually had to print something, even newspapers, they had to typeset it. They actually had to make the letters. They had to put them on a sheet, and it was like this pressing. Anyways, it's bizarre. It's absolutely bizarre, but this is how it was done for years. And it was slow, and everything was slow. Like everything was weeks. Now it's hours and minutes.
Right.
But the thing that has not changed in all of the system is the human brain. So the human brain and today we're terrified of generative AI because it does it in seconds.
Right. That was my next line of questioning was AI.
But I love it.
I think the objectives, what we want to get out of businesses is the same, but our tactics have changed and they continue to change. And one of those things that we've been talking about for, you know, probably in almost every interview I've been doing, but also in my classes for over the past year, even though AI has been around and machine learning has been around long before that, is the way that it's changing and how to make best use of it when you're thinking about your brand and your marketing and your communication strategies.
You got to use everything to your advantage.
Yeah.
At least I think so. I love learning and that's why I'm in the business.
Right.
We started the first conversation about sitting and learning and understanding why people do what they do. Seinfeld, I loved because that show was all about understanding why people do what they do, right? And it's, you know, it's that observation. And so, yes, using as many tools as possible, as you said, tactically, everything, there's different ways. To be able to communicate one-on-one, I keep, you know, hearing about, you know, one-on-one, we're going to be doing one-on-one communications.
A personalization,
right. And, you know, there wasn't any technology to do it properly.
Mm-hmm.
We could splice in, we'd go different profiles and personas and we would go, and then we go, okay, that's great. Now, how do we know that person's that persona? How do we know that one? Well, we could do a questionnaire, then we can put them into this, but they change. People change, right? Yeah. Their situation, their lifestyle changes, you know, where they are in their life cycle is, you know, everything changes. But technology, AI, can actually help. There is ability there to actually move. If you have enough information, you can actually start building that relationship one-on-one. I think that's fabulous.
Yeah.
It's also scary because used incorrectly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about the biases that are baked into a lot of AI tools and changing that. It's a lot of what we talk about with the digital media management side that I teach on is how do you make sure that you're creating accessibility, that you have affordances, the right ones on the digital aspects of your brand, you know, that you're using the AI properly, that you're not baking in implicit biases.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Edelman just came out with their reputation report
for 2024. Yeah.
Okay. It's pretty depressing.
Yeah.
I just looked at it just a couple of days ago, and it's depressing from a misinformation perspective. I mean,
oh, yeah.
I did today on the New York Times. They have, can you tell the difference of pictures that were portraits of people? And I was saying, can you tell which ones are been created by AI? And I go, oh, yeah, I can do this. Out of 10, I got 2 right.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And I thought I knew.
On the other hand, a small use case for a client's landing page for a new campaign they're doing for career technical education, we had a picture of one of the employers of some of the students, and her arms were cut off in the picture. We were able to use generative AI to fill in the arms, which was fantastic because we didn't have another picture of her. You know, so you can use it in these small ways too that help enhance the work you're doing. And I think that's what we need to keep into perspective, right, is how do we use these tools to enhance what we're doing, not take it over?
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, I remember the typewriter.
Yeah, and I did too. I'm older than I look. I learned how to type in what was we then called junior high, which I think now is middle school.
Yeah. And the big evolution there, or innovation, was the correctable tape that you could go back and retype the letter. You don't have to start all over again. And then when the computer came, right? And it was like, oh, but this is going to, yeah.
Yeah. Well, now they're bringing cursive back in schools, not to digress, because students aren't able to read their grandparents' handwriting, or probably their parents' handwriting even. So I hear things go full circle a little bit. It's really interesting. I wanted to ask, though, what advice would you give to somebody who is thinking about building a brand, a new company, you know, or a personal brand? Because you've talked a lot about your thoughts on personal branding, but, you know, we have the 5 C's. Is there anything else that somebody really needs to make sure that they're paying attention to?
So everybody seems to go to the why really quick, which is the commitment. What are you going to give? What is it that you have to offer? And what's that big picture? What's your promise? And I go, I don't know if you're ready. If you're starting right from ground zero, that might be too early.
Mm-hmm.
What you need to do is understand your customer. What is the problem? Really understand the problem, because you're not going to be able to solve it if you don't really understand the problem. Because if it's something like 2 levels down, 3 levels down, if you won't solve it, and your product's not going to be that successful. So that's where I would start, is really understanding what is it you're trying to solve, and make sure that it does solve what they're actually looking to solve. And eventually, your why will come out. But I think, the reason I say this is I've looked at a whole bunch of brands out there. Apple, for example, really good one. They didn't know why they were doing what they were doing, but they sure did once they started going.
Right.
And, you know, most brands do. Most brands understand what they're really trying to do. Amazon, I think, is a really good one, because Amazon still to this day starts with the customer. The famous chair that's in the boardroom. I don't know if you heard this story, but there's always a chair, an empty chair, and that empty chair in the boardroom is representing the customer, so that they make sure any decision that they're making, that the customer is part of that decision-making process. And that started at the beginning. And, you know, out from there, the why and the promise comes from there. Don't be hard on yourself. I mean, sure, you got to have a name. You got to have your logo. That's important. You know, people need to know what it is, but what it represents in the bigger picture, focus on the product, the service, and make sure the product and service is the best ever. And it's unique enough that it's the first of something.
Yeah. And that also...
That was easy.
It sounds easy, but it helps you strip away all of the fluff, right? Because I think we have a tendency sometimes to say, oh, we know that this is a cool bell and whistle and this and this and this, and we need to pile all these things on, and that might not be what's right for your customer.
Yeah.
And it might actually dissuade them from wanting to buy your product because they can't even find it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, this has been, Kim, a really wonderful conversation. I've really enjoyed our back and forth. I think we could easily do multiple episodes. And so I'll definitely be talking to you after this and figuring out when we can bring you on again. maybe when your second book launches. And I always ask, and I teed this question up before we got on, but if you have a favorite quote or mantra, family motto, verse, words of wisdom that you live by.
Okay. So you did give me a little warning, and so I've come up with something.
Okay.
And I paraphrased a quote from Maya Angelou. And this quote is how I defined what a brand is. And a brand isn't about what it says or does, but how it makes its customers feel. I wish I came up with that.
You know, I think
completely
everybody,
by myself.
Many, many of us have thought that same thing. I wish that we'd come up with that.
Yeah.
That's such an important one. And it's been coming up a lot in conversation. So,
and I wish I'd known that when I was working at an advertising agency.
Yeah.
Because I was so busy making sure what it looked like, what we were saying was so important. And eventually we got to, you know, do you think they're going to feel, but that was never the question of everything that we did. And it should be the question, everything you do and building your brand is, what do you want them to feel?
That's a beautiful way to end this conversation. I do have one last thing. What is the easiest place? Do you want people to go to your website, your LinkedIn?
They can go, website. It's my name, rozdeeba.com. They can go to LinkedIn. They can find me there. Rozdeeba's, I think it's rather unique last name, if you can remember to spell it. R-O-Z-D-E-B-A. You can find me.
Fantastic. And we will also, of course, put that in the show notes and on my website.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so
Annika,
much.
This has been awesome.
Yeah.
Enjoyed
this. Really fun.
Thank you.
Well, I really appreciate you being here and taking some time out of your busy schedule for us today. I know that I got a lot out of this conversation. I know our listeners and viewers did too. So thanks to all of you who are watching and listening this episode. Don't forget to leave a rating and review. They help more people find the podcast. And I will be back again in a few days with another amazing expert to share their knowledge and just help your business get that much better.
Want more? Check out amplifywithannika.com or follow me on socials at amplifywithannika.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today for generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
As we close out today's episode, I want to thank Simplified again for making it possible. For all marketers and creators out there, Simplified is your ally in effortlessly crafting on-brand content with a design and video AI. Discover how AI can enhance your creative process at simplify.com. Start for free and elevate your content game. Thanks for listening, and here's to your next creative breakthrough.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.